Billy Evans.
Blog Talk Radio.
He was killed when a car rammed into him and another officer at a Capitol security outpost. You're listening to NBC News Radio.
Top Cosmos has started its fourth year on the air by moving to a new day and time. Be sure to tune in Sundays at 1 p.m. for fascinating conversation about the cosmos and what it means to your life. Sue Rose Minahan and her panel guests take you on a journey of deeper awareness while connecting intentional meaningfulness to astrology's energies and cycles. Talk Cosmos, now heard or watched on Sundays at 1 p.m. on KKNW. Learn more at TalkCosmos.com.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies today and a little bit of rain mixed in after 1 o'clock and most of the afternoon. High temperatures around 50, 51 degrees. Tonight, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 38. For Thursday, clouds and light showers will start the morning and day off, moving to mostly sunny skies by the afternoon. High temperatures a little bit warmer, around 52, 53. Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies, lows down to about 38. Power, though, for Friday and running up into the weekend, more clouds and light showers expected again. High temperatures in the high 40s to low 50s.
Alternative Talk 1150 is your sports organization's safe bet when it comes to airing your team's games. Our players are all seasoned professionals when it comes to sports programming. Imagine your games being heard on local radio. Your team deserves the MVP treatment. Call 425-653-1150 today to learn how affordable and fun it is to broadcast your games on the radio. Call 425-653-1150 and make your next season something special. That's 425-653-1150.
What's one of your favorite memories?
Let's see. Well, there was this one time I went snorkeling in the Caribbean when I was a kid. It really just blew my mind. I mean, when you're sitting on the beach, it's so peaceful, and you sort of forget there's a whole other world under there, just full of all kinds of life. We saw the most beautiful corals. I remember thinking they were waving at us as they moved with the ocean. And then there were all these amazing fish. They kind of reminded me of tropical birds. They were so bright and colorful, just darting all over the place like birds in the sky. I'll never forget it. It completely changed the way I look at the ocean.
Most of us have a memory of being in nature we'll never forget. Let's protect the world's natural places so more memories can be made for generations to come. Visit worldwildlife.org.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit CarrieNail.com.
Imagine starting your week off with a teaching, a clearing, and an activation direct from the God Consciousness. If you would like to feel more in charge of your week ahead, then I personally invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, for our monthly Soul Sunday non-denominational service at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, online or in person. All donations for this event go to the TLC Initiative Fund to help those in need. Sign up now at TracyLClark.com and let's connect together in the glory realm.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune into A Cup of Comfort with me, Trishelle, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's trishlaub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Tune into the show, Heart Change Consciousness, with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, changemakers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
Enough of the been there, done that ideas. Tired of too much talk and so little action. Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Thank you for joining us today at Center for Transformation and Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy Obear, she, they pronouns. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Sersis Mendez from the Campus Transformational Justice Project, among other things that I have to say, and then I'll do a bio service. I could not be more excited to be here learning with you, because I work with organizations to think about organizational change, conflict mediation. But when I started hearing more about you and transformational justice, abolitionist approaches, I was like, I didn't even know. I barely understand transformative justice. And so Dr. Sersis Mendez, Vice Chair, Associate Professor, Women, Gender Studies and Queer Studies with affiliate faculty, African American Studies, Cal State University, Fullerton. Just such dear colleagues and friends. I was reflecting that when I was going to college four decades ago, none of this was at the college I was. And would I be different if I had A, been attracted to and B, learned with? But you're a popular educator, organizer, decolonial feminist philosopher, got my attention, and then founder of the Campus Transformative Justice Project that started in 2017 in the aftermath of all the horrific dynamics related to Larry Nassar and the silence, collusion, participation that we may have seen replicated so many places, including LSU is in the news today, as well as Oregon State President, who was the former president there. And so the dynamics that you have had on the ground working with are in most every organization that I know. And that was at Michigan State. And you are committed to abolitionist intersectional approaches to addressing sexual assault, gender-based violence, anti-blackness, other forms of racism, is again the murder and slaughter of Asian American women and of others in Atlanta, and the ongoing anti-racist, anti-Asian racism this last year plus, that is actually just a continuation of centuries. Listeners, you understand history through lines, and so to be here today with you to really understand how can we, in organizations, particularly higher ed, dismantle these forms of oppression, create structures to ensure liberation, healing. And so as a consultant, facilitator, strategist, you do all this work to address systemic harm and create liberation. Thank you so much for joining me, Circes.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm particularly excited because you actually have taught me a lot about spades since the pandemic. We have a mutual friend that started a gathering that I got to be a part of. And I am now a ardent spades person when I show up. So,
we got to struggle. We got to play together.
So thank you for joining us. Can you just tell us a bit more about yourself and how you got in this and how you're doing this time of pandemic and just national time of racial reckoning and sexual violence reckoning? So
a little bit more about me. So I will start out by saying I am Puerto Rican, Boricua, sort of born and raised on the mainland. I think this is an important part of my first sort of political awakening, is really thinking about the colonial relationships between the United States and Puerto Rico, right? The fact that so many people don't even know Puerto Rico is part of the U.S., that if you're born on the island or born here, we're citizens, right? So I was born on the mainland, Paterson, New Jersey, to a single mom who has, you know, who raised four children without necessarily speaking English. And so all of her struggles as a single mom navigating systems, right? Welfare systems, social services. So a lot of the encounters with those systems have really shaped my draw towards things like transformative justice, particularly all of the ways in which she was surveilled and the systems and those services tried to surveil her through us, right? So I often tell this and share this story where I just had this recollection of a welfare agent coming and checking on the house and asking me questions about my mom's sexual life, right? And I was 8 years old. And what was that about, right? So all of these encounters with these services have really shaped my entry into political activism and sort of my orientation towards transformative justice, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But to answer your other question, and we can talk more about my background and such, but how am I doing in this time of pandemic? I'm actually, you know, I actually surprisingly feel hopeful. I think that, and I'll tell you why I feel hopeful. I think that the uprisings this summer really put on the menu our need to start to radically reimagine the world we want to live in. I think that that moment, that's not a question anymore. The fact that we have so many young people demanding that we defund the police, that we reduce our reliance on violence-based systems, it's hopeful to me that it's at a moment where, you know, I know that maybe even 2 years ago, many of us could not have even imagined this kind of persistent call. And so I feel hopeful in the sense that we have an opportunity right now to really explore what it would mean to build that world. And I just feel really sort of oriented towards thinking about what that might look like. So
I know 2 years ago, I didn't even know about defund the police and so many other, it's really since George Floyd's murder that I have really deepened my investment in dismantling racism, creating liberation, anti-blackness was not a term that was on my radar, even though I was doing work with whites. I don't think I'm that different from other change agents on campus, particularly white, that have been doing some work and now have this call for truly transformational culture change and how transformative justice might be a part of that. So in these moments, I'm seeing some rollback. I'm seeing leaders that the summer may have put out a statement, and I'm committed, and even after the January 6th white supremacist domestic terrorist insurrection, I wonder the same pullback we're seeing in Congress may also be in our organizations. And so if you were talking to senior leaders about the critical need to have this level of transformational change, re-envisioning, reimagining our current and future, especially in the organizational level, what would you say to them? Why now, and how do we have to commit to long-term systemic organizational change with transformative justice being a part of that?
Well, you know, I think part of the place where I struggle, and I'm not going to answer this question in general. I'm going to think about the university setting that I'm thinking about, because to me, part of the issue has been that when we make these arguments about why it's important to do this work, it's often within the frames that are legible to these institutions. So there's all of this, like, for me, there's a question about, like, what are we asking for in this moment, right? The conversations about diversity are often framed in terms of issues of more representation. And I think while more representation is good and fine, I think if it doesn't alter the conditions that lead to harmful, like, life, you know, and work conditions for people, then we're not doing anything by adding more people of color into those spaces. We haven't touched the root of the problem, right? I think we have to radically reframe our conversation, because often when we're talking to these organizations, this turn to social justice almost gets framed as if they're doing a favor. Like, they're doing us a favor by thinking about questions of social justice. And I actually don't think it's a favor. I think we need to start thinking about what is their obligation to reparations? What is the cultural obligations to reparations? How can we do assessments of organizations where we track what is due? Because you're not doing me a favor when you start taking on this diversity and social justice conversation. What we need to start talking about is, how has your organization benefited from the extraction of labor, ideas, contributions of POC, and now what is your responsibility to pay back there? That, like, those are the kinds of, like, organizational assessments I would like to do, where we're going in and saying, here's your reparations report. Because honestly, so much of the conversations are about, oh, we need to add a little more, we need to hire more people of color, but you haven't done anything to prepare the ground for what it means to bring in folks into these spaces. And unless we're doing that work, you hiring more people often means introducing more people to harmful arrangements. So, like, in the context of the university, I see it all the time where we want to bring in more people of color as professors, right? But we don't want to look at the tenure process that makes it impossible for faculty of color to stay at an institution. We don't want to talk about the inequitable service loads, where if you're at a Hispanic serving institution, which I hate that term, but, you know, if you're at an HSI, and that's, like, my situation right now, I'm the only Latina in my department whose tenure track, women gender studies, right? I'm the only Latina in my department, and what that means is that I have students, both who are in my classes and who are also not in my classes, tapping me for all kinds of labor. And it isn't just the students. It's the institution itself that says, we have a diversity problem. We want people of color at the table, but they're not willing to create structures that sort of give something back to the faculty helping you solve your problem. Because at the end of the day, the institution has a diversity problem, I don't have a diversity problem, right? So if I help you solve your problem through my labor, which, by the way, is becomes really challenging because what that means is often my intellectual work becomes diversity work when maybe that's not what I had envisioned for my own career trajectory, but because the institution needs so much in that line, suddenly my intellectual labor, all of who I am sort of gets sort, you know, channeled into this diversity project that has nothing to do with my own vision for my own trajectory. So I think that these institutions don't plan for how to uplift the contributions of variously situated people of color in the institution, right? And so I think that it is important, but I think one of the challenges I have is thinking about its importance beyond a moral argument. Because I just don't find that people are moved by moral. I don't find that organizations or institutions are moved by that. So there's the contributions that are brought in, and there's also, like, you know, these arguments that when I think about the world I want to live in, right, it includes relationship building. It includes all of these things that so many organizations are not set up to do. So for me, there is something about thinking intergenerationally, at least at an institution, like what are the goals of the institution? And I don't know in general, but I know at universities, there's this assumption that we're developing the next generation of labor, right? Even if you take that sort of base level conversation, I feel that the institution has a responsibility to respond to the populations that show up at it. So if nothing else, they do have that responsibility on a base level. And with that includes a whole bunch of skills. So from my perspective, there's a value in thinking about those things. And I'm still sort of marinating on whether or not I feel it's most important to translate it into the terms of the institution, or whether or not we have to radically push back and reframe or put on the table what the values are that we have.
Exploiting the labor of folk of color and indigenous folk. And even as an institution, and then generically might say, we are here developing the next generation of leaders, the next generation of labor to be exploited by capitalistic systems, and mm-hmm. so really blowing up the purpose of higher ed and asking people to reimagine, are we really, could we be a place where we are developing leaders, collaborators in the best sense to redesign, reimagine our future to truly meet the needs of all and end these 4 or 5 centuries exploitation, extraction of labor resources. Whew.
Yeah, just to give you one concrete example from the institution, like universities everywhere have adopted this thing about land acknowledgments, right? So, okay, we're acknowledging that we're on this unceded territory, we're acknowledging that, but how many of us are actually using the institution to make sure that indigenous people are getting resources? Like, how are we using the resources that we have at this institution beyond a performative land acknowledgement? That's one example, right?
And reparations, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And we can think about what that looks like also, right, for African Americans in this country. We got to think about how we're using these institutions to repair those historical harms, especially if the institution continues to benefit from that stolen land, right? Or that labor. So that's one example.
And I may be using reparations incorrectly. I was thinking of it broader. I know it's within for African Americans and blacks, but as you talk about indigenous folks, how many institutions are saying we owe, and so we want to work with elders of the regions where we are. How can we have a collaborative benefit, whether it's 100 spaces every year, 200. I don't know the answers, but having leaders really in that way of being of culture, this is our purpose here, and repair, which may translate or at least be a way to move into also the work of from restorative justice to transformative justice.
Mm-hmm.
What I know is most organizations aren't even doing restorative justice, so I wondered if you could talk a bit as we move into break in about 5 or 10 minutes. Just what do you see as the current practices on when there is harm, whether it's individual or collective, whether it's punishment focused, however the frame you use. I know there's a word that begins with C, carceral, I think, which I'm surprised I could pronounce. So if you could talk about what do you see in higher ed, what's problematic about it, and then that might take us to break, and then we come back to talk about restorative and transformative.
Yeah. So one thing, okay, so the way we tend to deal with harm at institutions, we can talk a little bit about that, is very carcerally oriented, right? In the sense that it's all oriented towards punishment, right? And I understand how we got there, okay? For me, I think part of the issue is that when we think about accountability, we only have a punitive model frame for thinking about accountability. That's part of the issue, right? So even in our social justice calls for accountability, that's all we have within our frame. The challenge with that is that over the long haul, the systems that have been developed to dole out punishment tend to harm communities of color more than they do the folks who are maybe causing harm in our communities, et cetera, so on and so forth. I think part of the reasons why we activate a punishment frame, and I'll just say this, and then we can talk about the distinctions between restorative and transformative justice as I see them, is that one thing that we can think about, and I actually want us to really rethink what we think accountability is in general. I want to put that on the menu as something we need to talk about. But part of the reason why punishment becomes so attractive, and I understand how this happens because I feel it in my body when you're on the side of the right, you're on the right side punishing people or whatever, is that punishment gets framed as an act of care. If I am punishing this person, I am showing you how much I care about this issue. So the harsher the punishment, the more I show I care. That's how we end up with these zero tolerance frames, right? And so when we do punishment, we're actually trading in an optics of care. We're showing that we are good people. We are on the right side of history by punishing these people for doing wrong. The issue with that is it doesn't often get, and we're so busy trading in this performance of care that we might fire somebody, we might throw somebody in jail. What we're doing there is we're not actually solving the root of the problem. What was the conditions that led to the harm in the first place? What we're doing there is we're outsourcing the problem to someone else's neighborhood.
So good.
So we throw them out. That's fine. It solves the problem temporarily, but it's an individualized response. We throw them out, and we actually don't talk about things like when we talk about gender-based violence. That's not housed in any one person. That is part of everyday culture, right? When we talk about racism, we are born and raised and steeped in racism from the time we're, you know, come into this world. And then we're going to act like it's an individual person's problem. So that's part of the issue with that sort of framing, that we could punish individuals, but it doesn't touch the root of the problem. And that's where TJ and RJ is trying to sort of make a dent.
And I'm reminded that even at folks that are trying to do healing of often disproportionate folks of color, indigenous folks are the ones that are held much more accountable in our discipline systems, whether it's dean of students, whether it's athletics, we could keep going, faculty, because until we whites have the capacity to dismantle racist attitudes, white supremacist beliefs in ourselves, our practices. We are just perpetuating, even if the system looks different, we are still perpetuating. So I think we have a few more moments. Do you want to just begin looking at what is restorative justice? How might that be progress compared to the current systems? And then what is transformative justice?
Absolutely. Okay, so when I talk about restorative justice versus transformative justice, I want to say that, and I say this everywhere, I think those things exist on a continuum for me, okay? I think, first I will say, I'll talk about transformative justice first. I think of transformative justice as a philosophy, as an ethic, and as a framework that seeks to address harm and violence outside of violent state systems, okay? So it is an abolitionist frame, okay? It is moving towards abolition, and it includes practices, creative interventions. There's no one way of, it's not like it is this. It is not a replication of the criminal justice system. So if we don't do courts, then we do a transformative justice process circle instead of the courts. No, it's not contained within that. It's actually larger than that. And in that philosophy, there's this idea that justice has to be both individual and collective. What that means is that when someone causes harm, it is not just the problem of the two people, like the one person who caused harm and the person who was harmed. No, it is a collective project. It is neighbors, friends, families, comrades, colleagues have to start coming together and redefining what justice is and how to make things right together. Okay? So part of this move to sort of work outside of state systems is to figure out how can we start to get together to solve serious problems in our own communities, right? Serious problems in our own communities without police intervention, without social workers. What would it look like to do that, and how do we have to skill up to do that, okay?
When we come back, there's going to be so much more because listeners are saying, how do I do that in residence life, in a faculty department? Because every example of sexual assault, gender-based violence, racist dynamics, there's a culture and a climate, as you're saying, that actually is happening once. It's happening 1,000 times a day. So how do we do it, the individual, group, and systemic level? As we go to break, Dr. Sersis Mendez, could you tell us, how can people find you? Because I think you're going to get lots of phone calls and emails if folks want to start learning and working with you and have you help them help their organization really transform.
Yeah, so you can find me at www.campustj.com and or you can email me at info@xercis.com. That's xhercis.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at Exchange Ideas. Yeah, those are my contacts.
I can't wait to come back in just a few minutes to dive in much more deeper. How do we have transformative justice practices in complex organizations? Dr. Sersis Mendez, see you all in a few moments.
Out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance through joy and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let the journey begin.
Tune in to the
the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss, every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Imagine you are a ball of steel, smooth, small, and cool to the touch. Your life is stopping you with fire. You will take hits that shape you. You will be forged into a powerful, purposeful work of art. Tune in to Forging a Life with Coach Christine Clark. Join us, Dr. Papasili, in a three-part series, Truths in the Creation of Katana, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Christine Clark, a gifted, engaging speaker and trainer who has forged her life in the fires of self-employment, will take you on a journey to exploring the internal, mental, and emotional blocks that stand between us and a life of significance through an analogy of the process of crafting a traditional Japanese sword, or katana. For more information about Christine, visit sunglowtransformation.com.
Can't get enough of Eye of Soul Radio? Join psychic medium Jamie every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Take a deeper look at the raw side of spirit. Nothing is off-limits. Connect with lost loved ones and explore these vulnerable subjects with the compassionate guidance of psychic medium Jamie. You are not alone. Eye of Soul, Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Transformation Talk Radio.
So excited for more conversation with Dr. Circes Mendez of Transformative Justice Work. And if you all want to find all kinds of other resources to support this social justice, racial justice work, if you go to the Transformation Change Radio site, you'll see access to my design and facilitation course, as well as free access to Navigating Difficult Situations course, all my books, But I'm Not Racist is the one that's most related probably today, as well as on my website, drkathyaubert.com/resources. Lots of open source resources from leading white accountability groups, as well as all of my books are free downloads and many other resources. And the overlap with Dr. Circes Mendez's work around transformative justice, dismantling racism, really shifting the climate and the culture that has fueled and continues to perpetuate gender violence, anti-blackness, sexual assault. Dr. Circes Mendez, welcome back.
Thank you.
So could you just tell us more about transformative justice, how it all started, what, and just ways people might be able to rethink systems, structures to really repair harm?
Yes. So before we get there, I wanna finish the thing we were talking about right before, which is the transformative justice versus restorative justice question. And so I just want to make sure folks understand the distinction. I think that it's really important to note that transformative justice does begin in communities of color, and it begins with trans folks. It begins with very structurally marginalized people who have sort of recognized that calling the police has actually increased the harm in their communities. And so the response is to say, well, if we can't do that, then we shouldn't be left with nothing, right? So people have tried to create their own responses to harm because of that. With restorative justice has its root in indigenous communities. And I think that's important to know, because as it's gotten increasingly appropriated into institutions like schools, it has altered the way it is practiced. So the way it is currently practiced in the United States, I think that it's different from how people are thinking about transformative justice, because restorative justice is embedded in school systems that work with criminal justice systems. Mm-hmm. So what is often the case is it will say, you got in trouble for X, Y thing, you've been found guilty, and you can either do the regular criminal justice punishment or you can take this restorative justice track.
Wow.
And what that means is that they're leveraging the punishment of the state to get participation in the RJ track. It's not to say that people are not transformed by their participation in the restorative justice track. And I do see restorative justice, even as it's embedded in schools, as being a really important move towards harm reduction. So I am not critiquing it for its like embeddedness. I just say that RJ in that formation, I'll take it over the criminal justice. Sure, I'll take it. And if anything that moves us closer to an abolitionist frame, I'll take it. Because that's what we have to do. We have to keep just building up options, right? The other thing I want to mention is that I do see them as asking different kinds of questions. So, for instance, you know, philosophically, restorative justice might say, how can we restore the relationship or repair the relationship to what it was before the harm happened? Transformative justice says, okay, that's fine, but if the relationship only works when it's harmful, then we want to transform the relationship. So, like, you can think about patriarchal relationships this way, right? Like as long as you follow my instructions, we're good. But that's not what transformative justice is trying to do, right? It's trying to say, we want to destroy the patriarchal dynamics of this relationship. So it's often thinking about not just the individual relationships, but it's also thinking about the structural conditions that they also want to shift. So it's like taking restorative justice and putting a hug around it, as it were. So that's how I think about that. I also, that sense of it comes from this organization called Philly Stands Up. And there's all these incredible organizations where I have learned an enormous amount about transformative justice from. So, and some of those organizations I do want to sort of name, because they're really important to name your lineage and how you come to know your thing. So the Bay Area Transformative Justice Collective is one really important site with Mia Mingus, who is a dope, disability justice activist, anti-J activist, Mimi Kim and Creative Interventions, Mariam Kaba and Project Nia. There's all of these, and Just Practice with Shira Hassan, there's all of these incredible activists who have taught me an enormous amount about this. Okay, so now that we have these distinctions, I see them as on a continuum. I will say that no institution that has legal relationships, like no university can actually do transformative justice. So that's important to say. But what we can do, because it's abolitionist, right? So as long as there's mandated reporting, you can't have a transformative justice possibility in the frame. But what you can do is you can take transformative justice values and principles, and you can bring them in to help people reorient how they're responding to harm. And that's what I do. So that's what the Campus TJ Project is about. It's really taking TJ values, principles, and practices and saying, how can we use these values and principles and practices to radically transform how we're thinking about our responses to sexual assault, how we're thinking about our responses to gender-based violence, and how we're responding to microaggressions daily. How do we think about the relationship between microaggressions and sexual assault? Like, so that we don't hold them as separate in the frame. Like, what is the connection between these things, right? So, yes. Okay. Now that I've said all of that, I will go to your question about, like, how we got here, which is to say, so I was working at Michigan State in 2016, and I am someone who, because I teach controversial issues in my class, and it's always feminist stuff, and it's always women gender studies issues, I am someone that students, particularly marginalized students on campus, whether they be queer, gender nonconforming, trans-identified, students of color, BIPOC, all these students tend to want to divulge information to me. And I'm a mandated reporter, right? So I find myself in this situation so often where I have to be like, I know you trust me, but, you know, here I am in this non-consensual relationship to the state where whatever you tell me, I'll have to share. And so, and often when they're coming to me, many, many of them don't want to go through a Title IX process. And there are very good reasons why they don't, right? It's not for nothing that so many students, and it's not just students, it's also faculty of color who find themselves not wanting to, and for very good reasons, don't trust that these processes will be able to hold them because of who they are. And so, you know, if the person who's harming you is also part of the community of color at a predominantly white institution, a lot of these students understand that in their bodies and don't necessarily want a punitive option. But that's not on the menu, right? And so I found myself at MSU asking these questions about mandated reporting. I'm like, why is mandated reporting the only option when we're thinking about survivors? We clearly have one perception of who the survivor is that we would force people who have been structurally harmed in their daily lives, in their communities. They come to these institutions and all of a sudden we're throwing them in front of police or like putting them under these investigative processes, which the truth of the matter is, many of them didn't want to go through. So I started asking these questions. And as I started asking these questions, all of a sudden, this huge case, the Larry Nassar case with over 250 survivors, right, erupts on the scene. And I suddenly have to be put in this position where I have to really, really think about what I'm saying, because for me to make an argument or to start to think about what it would look like to respond to sexual assault, not with police and not with prison, in that context, was like a challenge. I'm not going to lie. It wasn't like that was an easy thing to be like, oh, yeah, no. And I'm not trying to save Larry Nassar. Like, let's not get it twisted. I'm not interested in salvaging him or anything like that. But one of the things I learned in that process was they went through the criminal justice route. They spent billions of dollars. When you calculate the there was at least 11 people that supposedly knew about, it had been reported to. When you collectively put all those cases together and not just the Nassar case, I mean, not just Nassar himself, right? but all the subsequent, the president of the university, all of these cases, right? And you think about the amount of money that was spent on trying to make sure that this person goes to jail, but none of it, very little of it, was spent on healing services for the survivors, on addressing the ripple effects of harm in that community. I cannot tell you, the town of Lansing was completely devastated because we had many, many of those survivors had remained in the city. But it wasn't just, if we treat it as an individual situation, we don't take into account the impact on parents, on brothers and sisters. I mean, this was something that, like, impacted everybody, right? And so to see the impact and recognize that nothing in our criminal justice system thinks about the well-being of all the people that were impacted, it really emphasizes why we need to radically reimagine what we think justice is. Because, yes, he went to jail, and he didn't even go to jail for that particular violation. He went to jail for something else. But he did go to jail, in prison. And then at the end of this case, there was this moment where people were like, he went to prison. Justice was served. Don't you feel healed? And you could see all of these survivors, it was like, okay, now he's in prison. Now what? Right? So it goes to show you that, like, all, like, the criminal justice only gives you one model that doesn't necessarily include healing, well-being, or even on more lower stakes cases, a pathway to transform. Because the truth of the matter is we can throw people in jail all day, or prison. We can throw people in prison all day. But we have to ask ourselves, does that make better human beings? Like, are we sending someone to a place to reflect on their actions? To really, like, no, what we're doing in that mode and in that moment is we're creating a situation where that person actually has to think about survival, self-survival. There's very little space to think about, you know, to have reflection around what you did when you're going to prison, because you really do have to think about how you're going to survive there. And it goes back to you. So anyway, I started asking these questions, and then when this erupted, the dean at the university came to me and had come from Penn State.
Wow.
So he had come from another school that had a huge sexual assault scandal with the Sandusky case, saw that Michigan State was making similar moves, and said, we have to do something different, and I think you might have something to offer here. And then that's how we got into this conversation about how far are you willing to go. And so we started to do this work where we're really looking at the root of a lot of harm at the institution and thinking about how to start to address those roots, who needs to be skilled up and how to de-escalate harm, to, you know, shift, right, to create safety and support. How do we have to reimagine support, et cetera, so on and so forth. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking for a minute.
Well, this could be 3 hours and we won't be done. So I would love you back. If you could, in our few minutes left, talk about, so what are some of those reimagined transformational structures, training, and you particularly have my heart around the hundreds of individuals harmed and their community. So, and then I'm also thinking everyone who heard about it or had to listen to these stories. So I'm thinking the initial response. So for whatever you can share of helping people really complexly think, if you were going to do a systemic transformational justice intervention, these are the areas to be thinking about, or whatever you want to talk about.
Actually, I love that question. I when I think about the areas that we need to think about from a transformative justice lens, you know, I have benefited from this framing that Miriam Kaba sort of shared with me during one of the workshops we did. So when I think about four areas we need to look at, really there are four areas. The first area is the survivor, okay? How are we creating, the first question we need to ask is how are we creating safety for the survivor? What can the survivor name what that looks like for them? We don't often give survivor an opportunity to name what that might look like for them. We do the one size fits all. So we might take a survivor out of the classroom in the name of safety. But what that means is we're isolating the survivor, and that doesn't feel safe, right? How can we create a sense of agency around what the survivor might want? So if a survivor doesn't want mandated reporting, what other options are we offering them, right? And actually, the mandated reporting has nothing to do with the survivor's well-being. It's about liability. We don't want to lose federal funding, so we want to talk about how we're in compliance. And that's what Title IX is about. It's about making sure we're in compliance. It's not about the survivor's needs. So we might, you know, a safety protocol in the university might be a no contact order, right? That's an example of a safety protocol. But the truth of the matter is we can't actually make sure that happens, right? We can't actually enforce it. So why are we creating safety protocols that we can't enforce, right? Agency. We're not giving survivors a lot of agency. How do we create the conditions where a survivor feels like they belong? When people come forward, they're taken out of classes. They're put aside. All of a sudden, their communities are questioning them, right? Like, did this really happen? Blah, 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 all this stuff. And we're not actually creating an environment where people can actually feel like they're believed, they belong, right? And so that's one example. The second area we need to look at is the person who caused harm. Are we creating pathways for them to transform their behavior? We don't have that. We have punishment, but we can get rid of somebody. Like this happens all the time with faculty who are problematic. They get suspended for a year. They disappear for a year, and during that time, no one has any idea what they're working on. Then they come back, and they're like, and people are like, why did you disappear? No one understands.
Silence.
There's a lot of silence. And then when they come back, the person who was harmed, because they don't know what they were working on, it all surfaces again. Mm. So if we're not developing pathways for transformation, we're not doing anything in the punitive frame because they're not actually working on anything. The third area is what is the community responsibility? And this is a very TJ thing. Like, how many of us have watched, witnessed things happen, microaggressions in faculty meetings daily?
Yeah.
And no one says anything, right? That collective witnessing, transformative justice says, okay, no. Anytime there's harm in our community, that is an opportunity for all of us to get better. It isn't just that one person's responsibility. We are part of the conditions that allowed that to happen. So what needs to shift there? And then the fourth area is the structural conditions. How is the structure set up for this harm to continuously happen? And one example of that is with like these, we have these value systems in our universities that if you are a very successful grant writer or you are someone who is very well published, you become less accountable. You become untouchable in the system, right? So we have to shift those value systems so that just because you're good at that stuff doesn't mean you're not responsible for the people you harm in the space. So that's the fourth area, thinking about the structural conditions, right? And so we have units. One example is we have units actually talking about what are the values that are guiding their decision-making and how can those values be shaped by transformative justice in terms of, like, thinking about you know, for example, when we have harm in our unit, how is it that we need to become responsible to each other? Can we create networks in our units to respond to conflict so we don't have to escalate through a grievance process, but that we learn how to develop communication skills, de-escalate, identify microaggressions when they're happening, and so on and so forth within the units? And how do they have to look differently depending on the discipline? And I'll give you one last example, and then I'll wrap it up, which is to say, a perfect example of that is nationally we have history departments right now who teach historical material that has the N-word in it. This is an example, right? The discipline itself, and there's all these academics who want to hold on to that in the name of academic freedom. Well, transformative justice will say, okay, but if you want to make sure that students of color feel a sense of belonging at your institution, how do we have to hold that up to complicate the discussion on academic freedom? Which value is going to guide how you teach? So anyway, go ahead.
Well, and if you choose to do that and don't decolonize your curriculum, which might be a great conversation in the future, then there will be a TJ process that you will be a part of to repair the harm and shift the system and the practice. Dr. Cersis Mendez, please tell us again how folks can find you. Whew, thank you so much.
So you can find me at www.campustj.com, or you can email me at info@cersis.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Exchange Ideas.
I am full of such gratitude. I've learned so much. I have so much more I want to ask. We will be back next month with President Lee Goodson of Tulsa Community College, looking at systemic culture change, working within systems, outside systems. How do you lead as a president with an equity, social justice, racial justice lens? Cersis, from the bottom of my soul, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KMUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the sound. Starting things off over this time on I-5 southbound, just north of Union Street. Looks like around milepost 167. A recent disabled vehicle partially blocked in the left hand of the lane. Good thing DOT crews are arriving at the place again to take care of that disabled vehicle. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network and the Energy Paradigm. Dr. Victor Toractivarna. And it's all about from fiction to flow, the field.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Roberts. The CDC says a COVID variant first discovered in the UK is now quite common in the U.S. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says the B.1.1.7 strain is highly contagious and potentially deadly.
The virus still has hold on us, infecting people and putting them in harm's way, and we need to remain vigilant.
Dr. Walensky urged Americans to get vaccinated and continue wearing face masks while practicing safe social distancing. High unsafe speed is the cause of Tiger Woods' crash in February. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says Woods hit a median going about 85 miles per hour and then hit a curb on the opposite side of the road going about 75 miles per hour. The posted speed limit on this part of the road was 45 miles per hour. Under defense questioning, a use of force expert in the Derek Chauvin trial is admitting it would have been appropriate for the former Minneapolis police officer to use a taser on George Floyd. The defense lawyer also questioned Los Angeles police officer Jody Steiger about the difficulty of arresting Floyd.
Yes, and at one point, three Minneapolis police officers were attempting to get him into the backseat of the squad car from the passenger side of the car, correct?
Correct.
And they were not able to do so.
Yeah.
Steiger said Floyd was resisting arrest briefly while he was in handcuffs. SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket has successfully lifted off to launch 60 Starlink satellites into Earth's orbit.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
The goal of the mission is to provide reliable and affordable internet across the globe. The network is now available in parts of North America and will be available globally by 2022. Former President Donald Trump claims Congressman Matt Gaetz never asked him for a pardon. The Florida Republican is under investigation for alleged sexual misconduct. You are listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
We all make promises, big and small.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I do solemnly swear
to help you when you're in need.
To be considerate and caring. To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partner.
Child.
Most important commitment is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting MakeTheConnection.net.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies today and a little bit of rain mixed in after 1 o'clock and most of the afternoon. High temperatures around 50, 51 degrees. Tonight, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 38. For Thursday, clouds and light showers will start the morning and day off, moving to mostly sunny skies by the afternoon. High temperatures a little bit warmer, around 52, 53. Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies, lows down to about 38. However, though, for Friday and running up into the weekend, more clouds and light showers expected again. High temperatures in the high 40s to low 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
You're listening to an encore presentation from the Transformation Talk Radio Network.
What we've been taught and told is not all there is. Life is all about energy, and the energy you feel is real. Welcome to the Energy Paradigm with me, Dr. Vic Parajivarna. Let's take a deep dive to the energetic core of life, work, business, politics, and education. This show questions everything we've been taught and told. It is eye-opening, mind-shifting, transformative, and earth-shattering. So get ready to ignite the spark. Feel the energy and work the magic. The Energy Paradigm with me, Dr. Vic, starts now.
Hello, everyone. It's Danielle and Dr. Vic here with the Energy Paradigm, offering a different lens and a new perspective for the way forward for humanity. Creating our future with a high vibration energy of possibility to create good for all around the globe. We are all about energy, the universal language of humanity, something we all have within ourselves, that which does not have vocal cords, only feeling ones. You feel it in your body, and you know it when you feel it. This is something you can't fake. And it always tells the truth, period. You just have to learn how to read it and to work with it, something everyone can. So let's become energy literate. So we have just started year 2021 and said goodbye to 2020. In numerology, this year is a number 5. A year of unearthing and clarifying, of cleaning house, and of seeing through the muck. So what did you learn in 2020? What did you start in 2020 that was actually good for you and that you think you'll continue in 2021? As this was a year of possibility and personal breakthrough, consider what your possibility and breakthrough will be this year. Maybe you have New Year's resolutions or goals. Did you accomplish any of those from last year? Did 2020 teach you that life is about ticking off boxes or of accomplishing or having to reach 2020 a major breakthrough? Or did you learn it's about being? How to be? How to exist when everything around you seems to be falling apart? And how to find your center, the core and essence of you? In all of the turmoil, did you remember to smell the roses along the way? Because life is about the journey and enjoying it and living it and being life. So how can we be that when everything is turned around and feels so divided? I'll tell you a key. The way out is in go in within yourself. So, today we're going to talk to you about the field, how you show up for life. So we're going to start by taking your pulse. Where are you along your journey? How do you feel? Is there joy? Is there peace? Is there ease? Is there clarity and certainty? Do you have the energy to get going? Do you have the energy to show up for your loved ones, for your family, for work, and most importantly, for yourself? Can you be present in the moment, totally here, centered and present, focused yet relaxed and at ease? Can you find good around you? And are you willing to create good for others and the environment around yourself? How you truly feel and how you feel about a situation or another is always, always transmitted. It vibrates in your field. And that transmission finds its own level, whether you like it or not. Like the old adage, water finds its own level. Let's investigate today in this show the field of ours and how we can set it straight every day with our frequency and vibration.
I love it. Energy literacy, that's what we need, because we have not been taught or told. The only thing that we have been taught or told is that everything we can touch and see is real and all the other stuff isn't. And what the energy paradigm stands for, what we stand for, is that there is a far bigger world out there, and that world happens in energy, and the energy creates the physical tangible that we can see and touch and smell. So let's talk about the first component that you need to know in order to become energy literate. It's called the field. The field is, you can call it aura, you can call it electromagnetic field, you can call it bubble, some people call it egg, it doesn't matter. We have an energy field around us. And that energy field carries a signal. And for a lot of people who are not energy literate, that signal is random. Why? Because we don't know, right? So we go out there into our day, into our daily lives, and stuff happens to us that we actually don't want for us to happen. And many of these things that happen to us are actually a consequence of the charge, the vibration in our field. And you have seen that before. So let's say you got out of the bed with the wrong foot. You have one of those days, right? Nothing works out, and it's one of those doom days. You have that energy in your bubble, and that is why on those days, one thing after the other happens that you don't like. Why? Because there's friction in your field. You need to break through this. You need to say, it stops right here. So instead of plunging and jumping into more action, which is what we are taught and told, right? If something is wrong, you need to jump into action. You need to make things happen. You need to tweak it and do something. The opposite is needed. And Danielle, you just said that. The way is in. You need to stop right there when something like this happens to you and start feeling into your field. How am I energized? And we will talk a little bit more about the field and what that is and how to do it, right, and what the components are. But right now, what is in my field? Because the energy that you emit from your field, it's like what you just said. Water finds its own level. What does that mean? You have a certain vibration, a certain energy, a certain hum about you, and that hum aligns with other hums. We know that from frequency. If you have one thing, let's say you have a loudspeaker and you set the loudspeaker to a certain frequency and you turn up the volume, then something in your room will start to co-resonate, which happens to be at the same frequency. Yeah? So this is exactly what happens with our field. If we have anger in our field, guess what happens? You will find all the other wonderful people who are angry that day. If you have happiness in your field, you will actually find other people who are happy. And we always think, oh, it's because of my eye, because I'm seeing, right? I see bad stuff, so I see more bad stuff. I see good stuff, I see more good stuff. It doesn't work like this. It starts with the energy of it. And we are highly sensitive.
And that's calling entraining to the energy.
Thank you.
That you match the energy that's present.
And, you know, we need to become energy literate, because if we don't, we create all types of things we don't want to see in our lives. Here at the Energy Paradigm, we call this the wake of collateral damage. Imagine you are a ship and you're going in the sea or on a lake and you have a wake behind you, right? And that wake can be good ripples that make other people happy and that make yourself happy, or it can be frictionless ripples where you create what we call collateral damage, where you leave a lot of unhappy people behind. And that proliferates. And suddenly you have a whole bunch of unhappy people and they have it in their field and then they go on. This is how it works. So why not reverse this process and energize in a way that makes you happy, that makes you feel at ease, that makes you feel calm, that makes you feel strong, that makes you feel in your element, that makes you feel in charge of your life. And if you emit, if you are tuned to that radio station, so to say, if you emit this frequency, guess what happens? Other people will find you who are at the same frequency, and suddenly you can co-resonate. And those people who are not at your frequency, it might rub off on them a little bit. So like this, one apple can spoil the whole basket, meaning one employee can spoil the whole team, one family member can spoil the whole family, but one family member can uplift the whole family. One team member can uplift the whole team. And it takes one strong and very well-energized leader to turn around an entire company. And it takes a very strong, energized leader to turn around an entire country, if you want, and humanity. And this is what we are after with the energy paradigm. So what's in your field? And what can you do to charge? Again, what's in your field? Sorry, sometimes I'm speech impaired. So what's in your field and what can you do to charge your field with the right frequency and vibration that uplifts and elevates you and those around you? This is what we are after and this is what we need going forward, because we have too much divide. We have too much friction. We have too many unhappy people. We have too many people who are depressed. We have too many people on the verge of suicide. We have too many people who are suffering. And we always tend to wait for a savior out there who comes and saves us, and it's not how it works. We need to do the work ourselves. The way is inside. We are responsible. You are responsible. It starts with you.
And with the way in, it is your sacred time with yourself. It's not from a pill. It's not from a bottle. It's strictly time for you to commune with yourself. Period. And when we talk about the field, it really encompasses a lot of different factors. One being your thought, because energy follows thought. So whatever your predominant thought is of the day, the energy will flow in that direction. So if you have a thought, oh, God, this is going to be a horrible day. Everything is going to go wrong. What else can go wrong to this? What go wrong today? Well, imagine what's coming towards you. You're like a magnet. So whatever you set, whatever dial you set your temperament to that day or your thoughts, that's what you're tuned into, and that's what's going to come your way. So really something to be cognizant of, that you are co-creators of the energy that you emit. So you are responsible for that. You're also creating your day, your future.
And if you don't like, I'm sorry, if you don't like what you're seeing out there, you have co-created this thing. So it starts with you to change it. And changing doesn't mean you pick up arms or you argue. Changing means you change your field. And Danielle, you already mentioned that. So there are several components in our field. And if you are into any type of mindful practice, you have heard these things before because they are universal. You can go to any type of spiritual or whatever practice that has to do with how to be, and you will find these components. The components are body, mind, and spirit. And we will get into those now a little bit. Why the body? We happen to be in physical form right now, right? There's a body. We can move it. There's something going on. We need to eat. We need to breathe. All those good things. Now, the body has a big impact onto how we are energized, on our vibration, on our frequency. How is that? The emotions that we feel, and we feel emotions all the time, happy, sad, joyful, depressed, in love, in hate, right? I mean, all these things are going on all the time in the background. It's kind of the subconscious processing system of what's going on in our world. Those emotions go into the body, and they go into certain parts of your body, and they start lodging themselves there. That is why we need to move our bodies. All systems that kind of scratch on the surface of consciousness have that component. Look into martial arts. Martial arts works the body. It's not only to hit somebody, right, or to defend yourself. It is to move your body. Because once you are in your body, you can knead out the kinks. You can work out the emotions. For example, if somebody gets on your nerves or a situation gets on your nerves, you tend to get a stiff neck. Somebody or something is becoming a pain in your neck. If you repeat this often enough, you will start feeling pain here because something that is unease becomes dis-ease. That's how it works in our body, right? If you have a lot of headaches, then you need to investigate what is rubbing you the wrong way. If you get a lot of stomach things that have to do with anxiety, digestive often is lodged into anxiety, breathing too. So a lot of the symptoms where we have been taught and told to pop a pill, right, to get rid of it, is actually treating a symptom. It's not treating the root cause. You need to move your body. And you need to energize your body in a certain way so it feels at ease.
And one of the reasons why we say move the body is because, as Caroline May says, your biology is your biography. And everything that you think, everything that's happened in your life, leaves a copy in your body. And it leaves an imprint. So in order to release it, you also need to erase it from the body. And it's moving it. Whether you go hiking, whether do you do yoga, breathing, it needs action. Because we can't just be, we also have to move. It requires a tandem process for you to move the body. Because even if we go to therapy and discuss something, there's a copy still in the body. or sometimes people go to yoga class and they don't know why they're furious at yoga class or just burst into tears because maybe something has been dormant or hidden, repressed, that they haven't dealt with or didn't want to deal with until the body starts moving and they think, oh my goodness, I understand what made me so upset or what made me so sad, which is an invitation for you once more to address it and just get rid of it for good.
Eastern philosophy and Eastern medicine has been looking into exactly these phenomena for thousands of years. I mean, if you go into Ayurvedic, into traditional Chinese, they claim it's between 5,000 and 10,000 years it has been known that emotions can fester in the body. And they look into the elements, what is going on in your body, and they're trying to dislodge things. They're not treating a symptom, they're treating the root cause. That is where we need to go. So next time, for example, our heart can literally break. When your heart is broken, you get some type of heart disease, and then it becomes a disease, and then it becomes a heart failure or something like this. But those things are preventable. All chronic type diseases and all autoimmune type diseases have, or most of them, have their origin in a misalignment of energy within us. So that is the body part, and we need to be very, very mindful what we do with our body. The body needs to move. We are not made for sitting, so right now what we're doing here is actually not good for us. We should be moving all over, right? So movement is imperative for our bodies. Look at our ancestors. They all walked the land, right? And the hunters, gatherers, until we became settlers, and then we started sitting. So movement is paramount. Then the next thing our body needs in order to be energized, well energized, is we need clean air. We need sunshine. We need clean water. We need clean food. Those are the ingredients for a healthy body. That's the body part. Let's go to the mind part. The mind is a very funny thing. If unchecked, your mind can go completely bonkers. Because the mind has one primordial function, and the function is to protect you, the physical form of you. Protect your body. What does the mind do then? The mind constantly is on the lookout for, is this a threat or is this not a threat? Do I need to switch the body into fight or flight mode, or can I actually be here for a while? That is what the mind does. In every single situation throughout the day, the mind is preoccupied with what is the threat, where is the threat. And from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes sense because we need to make sure that we don't get eaten by a tiger. But nowadays, we need to make sure that we don't get run over by a bus, or that we don't fall asleep at the wheel, or that we don't use a nail gun to nail our hand to a tuba fork, which what a friend of mine did a couple of years ago. And so to avoid accidents and to avoid suffering in the physical form, our mind is very helpful. However, when you are in this constant discerning and in this pre-stages of fight and flight or in the fight or flight, your mind does something very interesting. It shuts down. It sends all the decision-making into your body. You gotta run. You cannot make decisions when you are stressed. You cannot make decisions when you are in fight or flight. That is why it is so important for any type of fighter to stay calm during a fight, because otherwise you cannot make good decisions. You make really stupid decisions. So our mind needs to be calm. And there's a very funny thing Alan Watts said that once. In Sanskrit, the word for mind is mud or muda, which means crazy, because our minds go crazy. They go bonkers. There's this constant chatter in the background, evaluating, judging, going here, going there, which prevents us from being here, in the moment, attentive, focused, listening, And that is what happens in most families, in most companies, in most relationships. People are not seeing each other because they're so preoccupied with other stuff. They don't see the essence of the person they're talking to. They don't even see their own essence. The second thing, we're not listening to each other because we're always listening to ourselves. Once we speak, and then when the other person speaks, we are thinking about our next sentence. We miss half of the message. And the third thing is, we don't even talk to each other. Right? Because it's almost like two monologues that miss each other when we talk to each other. That is what happens if our mind is not checked. Third part. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
There's a beautiful quote from Ram Dass, one of my favorite teachers. And who I think I am affects how I see you. And that pertains to the lens which we have for individuals and what we have for ourselves. Through what lens are we looking at the other person, being present to say, I hear you, I see you, and giving them the space just to be, because there's many strokes for different folks, as they say. One solution doesn't fit everybody. So through which lens, not am I judging you, because judgment of anybody is actually self-judgment. So it doesn't benefit anybody by judging, but just giving them the space.
Yeah. And you give the space by seeing the person, the essence, by listening to each other, and by talking to each other, by relating. And this is one of the big topics that we are going to get after as we go on with our shows here, because today we look into the field, how you're charged. The next show is going to be the call. It's going to be how do you step up. Today is how do you show up for life. The next show is going to be how do you step up. Now, the third part, we talked about the body, we talked about the mind. The third part that needs to be in sync, in line, we call it spirit. You can call it soul. You can call it your higher self. This is the part where you tap into something that is greater than you. And it's very, very difficult to explain what happens when you tap in, when you tune in. It's like you're turned on to something different. Once you start doing this, things that were very important to you are not that important anymore, and other stuff is getting much more important, like looking at the energy of yourself and of others. If you do not tap in, you are hollow, and you can see it in people's eyes. When the eyes are empty, we are too much trapped in the physical. We don't even understand the energetics of it. We are not energized right.
And people then focus completely on the physicality of life and of other people instead of the insight.
And we know that the physicality of it is a trap. Look at people in general. You get something and you're happy about it until you had it for a couple of days, and then you're not happy about it anymore because it has become known. So then comes the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And we have this inner craving. Something needs to be filled, and we are taught and told by society, by our parents, by companies, that we need to fill it with stuff. But no stuff is potent enough to quench our thirst. And you can see that with people who get more and more and more and more things, and they're still not happy. Why is that? Because there's a void inside. There's a hollow that wants to be filled with something of substance and not with something of material. From our perspective, it's not of no importance how you fill this. You can be Christian and you find the higher thing there. You can be Gnostic and you find your higher thing there. You can be Sikh. You can be any of Buddhists, any of the big world religions will fill that void. Not through ceremony, not through an empty repetition of sermons, but through the feel of it, through the vibration. And in every religion you find secret teachings. And those secret teachings, they get you on the right path. You can, Mother Nature, shamanic traditions. I mean, all, if you look into history throughout the ages, there always has been this search for something higher, something that we can tap into, something that ultimately provides us with guidance and insight and clarity.
It's also something that fulfills you. It's the essence of that which fulfills you. It's the substance that quenches the emptiness and this need for more, this need for something else. Because when you experience this, it makes you calm.
Yeah.
It makes you peaceful. It gives you joy. Kindness is what you want to give to yourself and to others. It sets you on a different path. And as Dr. Vic was just saying, you know, those things that you thought you once loved and you needed, like you need a new car, you need to go to Hawaii, you need this outfit, you need these shoes. When you embark on a practice that truly sustains you from the inside out, it doesn't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you gave so much weight to is immaterial. And then that sets you on a different path, and it opens a completely new world for you that leads to just completely altering your lifestyle.
Yep.
It makes you dedicated to the practice. It keeps you coming back because you want that juju every time you sit down or every time you go into prayer or every time you go outside or take your drum or when you sing or whatever you do. You want that all the time.
Let's look further into the juju after this short commercial break, and then we will get into the nitty-gritty of it. Thank you so much for being with us, the Energy Paradigm, Danielle and Dr. Vic.
Listening to an encore presentation from the Transformation Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Energy Paradigm.
Yes.
I'm Dr. Vic.
With Danielle and Dr. Vic, we need to change it in our intro because right now it only says Dr. Vic. So one to-do list task and goal for the year 2021. We just talked about the field. Today is all about the field, how we charge, what we carry out there, what frequency we are vibrating, and how that creates the world that we are experiencing. Three components to it. Body, mind, and spirit, we talked about them so far. So the question is now, what can you do to set your field? Because I've got good news for you. You are the co-creator of your own vibration. And it works through, how do you charge your body? Do you move your body every day? Do you take the staircase instead of the elevator? Do you have a workout routine? Do you have a yoga routine? Do you do martial arts? Do you go for walks? You need to work the body because it moves out all the emotions that tend to lodge in the shoulders, in the arms, in the legs, in the stomach, everywhere. This needs to be worked out, and sometimes it burns when you do that, and that's actually a good sign because that means the emotion is coming out. And as Danielle said before, when you're sitting in a yoga class and you start crying, that is grief coming out of your body. It's fantastic. Go on and try some more. So that's the body. And offer your body sunlight, clean air, good water, clean food. That's what the body needs in order to be energized. To match that, you need to calm your mind. How do you calm your mind? quiet time is so important. Nowadays, we are so immersed in noise. Noise from the street, noise from the computer, noise from the telephone, noise from the fax machine or the printer, noise from the music that we are playing. There's almost no quiet time anymore.
But in 2020, since a lot of people were at home, a lot of people found pulled and interested in learning something like meditation. So classes for meditation classes have risen exorbitantly. So there is a need for individuals to find that peace, that ease within themselves.
Calm mind and a calm body. That's how it works. And once you are calm, and how can you figure out if you're calm? Count your breaths.
Deep belly breaths. Buddha belly.
Try to go to maybe 6 breaths per minute. That's a good way to do it. The real masters, they do 1 breath per minute. 15 seconds in, 15 seconds holding, 15 seconds out, 15 seconds holding out. That's brutal.
Good luck.
Good luck with that one. But you can get it to 4 breaths a minute. The slower the you breathe and the more controlled you breathe, the calmer your mind. It's very interesting connection between your mind and your body here going on.
And your breath is indicative of your thoughts. So the slower and deeper you breathe, the calmer you are and the more in control of your thoughts and your emotions.
And the better decisions you will make, because you cannot make decisions when you're in inner turmoil. It doesn't work.
And neither will you be so reactionary.
Flying off the handle, fantastic. Yes, calm mind, calm judgment, calm look. Very important. And then we talked about spirit, the tapping in. So we already talked about all different types of traditions. If you choose yoga, that's perfect. If you choose a mindful meditation practice, that's perfect. If you're interested in dabbling into Buddhism, fantastic. Every tradition has something to offer. Sufism, they are all great.
There's not one better than the other.
No. Even like very entrenched and rigid institutions like the Catholic Church still have something to offer. If you read the Bible, there's instructions in there on how to meditate, actually. Yeah.
And really, it just comes down to you finding what works for you, what does it for you, and experiment and try different traditions or try them all.
Jewish, Kabbalah, they have it all. So it's all there. You need to find it and go to a bookstore. Look at all the things in the book that you pick out. You are in the right frequency for that book. That's how it works. It's very weird. It's not a conscious decision. It's not like, here it might take me 2 years and this might take me 1 year. No, that's not how it works. It is the hunch. It is the feeling. What you are attracted to is right.
Yeah. No rigidity. There's nothing to accomplish.
Outside your body, how can you charge your field? So right now we looked inside, right? We looked at mind, we looked at body, we looked at the spiritual realm. But there's also a lot of influence that comes from the outside that influences us. What people are you surrounding yourself with? What people are you hanging with? What's their energy? It rubs off. If you have somebody at home who's always complaining, that is a very, very heavy energy, and you know that when you go there and you try to be kind and nice and everything, and then when you leave, you're totally drained, right? Ugh. Then there are people out there who overwhelm you. They talk all the time, right? And they talk your ear off until you bleed out of your ears, and then that's the same thing. It's so draining. And in the end, you don't even know what they were talking about, and they don't even know what they were talking about because they just talk to justify their own existence, right? What books are you reading, if at all? What TV shows are you watching? You need to be very careful. There's energy imprinted in there, and that energy affects you and how you feel. It's not a mindless, I'm in a trance, watching this thing. Be very mindful. Is this energy that actually I want to expose myself to? Do I want to have this in my field? Because it drops off. What social media are you consuming? Are you one of those people who engage in the social divide? That has a big impact in not only how you feel, but what you're emitting and the people that you attract. What movies are you consuming, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So be very mindful of your interactions. The tendency is that on a normal day, we consume too much and we talk too much.
And with that, we also need to be cognizant of the environment we're in, whether at home or in the office, that it's not toxic. And a toxic environment is one that's rigid, it's critical, it's punishing, something is wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
That is the signs that, for anybody, that's not a healthy atmosphere or environment to be in to make any progress or to allow any spaciousness or freedom or permission to just be as you are, which is what we're after here in the energy paradigm, the freedom to be and express just how you are.
And with that, you are in the driver's seat. You are the leader of your life. It's your responsibility. And your authority, how you want to charge. And that is good news. Because like this, you're not exposed. You're not a victim. You're not exposed to anything that's happening to you because you can very deliberately choose what you want to let in and how you want to energize every single day. And it is like brushing teeth. You need to do it. If you don't do it every single day, it falls back into creating random, and we don't want random in our lives. There's enough turmoil out there. So your life, you are in charge for your life, nobody else. It cannot be delegated. There's not a pill you can pop to take care of this. It takes dedication and work. And it is the most precious thing you can do with your life.
Another factor to consider is the intention we have, the intent and the motivation why we want to do this, why you feel it's time to start a practice. Because that runs the whole show, your intention, and that you stay true to that intention, because that will carry you in days where you don't want to get up and meditate at 4 o'clock in the morning, or you don't want to go to Qigong or Tai Chi class or yoga class.
Yep.
It will carry you because you become committed to that end result, to that feeling.
How you charge is your responsibility, and you are one little thread in this global matrix, and your charge, your vibration, your frequency ripples out and influences the rest of the big web. So what do you want to resonate at? What is it? It impacts everything around you and your world. Now, let's talk a little bit about signs and nudges, because we all have a ton of signs and nudges in our lives that every day try to edge us a little bit closer to being charged right. The first thing that we want to talk about is repeating pattern. How do we repeat pattern? And maybe you want to take it away, Danielle.
These patterns in our life that keep coming up, and normally we are unconscious about them. We go into autopilot. This is the way it's always been done. We do it like this here. You are raised in this fashion until one day you think, what on earth am I doing? I don't like this. This doesn't serve me. And then when you become aware of that, the awareness, then you have the ability to change it. And, you know, just for the sake of this talking about the signs and our energy, what's really for you and suits you will not lower your vibration. And that is a way you'll know, and a good way to be cognizant of the signs that come your way. Lowering your vibration will make you feel down, bad, angry. Let that be an invitation for you to watch the signs and determine the signs that come your way, what it does to you.
You can even feel it in your body. A situation that doesn't feel right, you tend to shrug, pull in your head, pull up your shoulders. It's something that doesn't, it's just not sitting right. In a situation that feels good, it's opening up, it's expanding. The other one is contracting, right? If something ain't right, it is contracting. It feels dense. It feels tense.
And the breathing becomes shallow, and it becomes in the upper chest, not in the lower belly, which leads to better breathing and a calmer countenance.
There you go. And now, when we talk about repeating pattern, there's one thing that I think most of us have experienced, and that is we have been in a relationship, and that relationship broke up for whatever reasons, and we go into the next relationship, and there's the same person again. Right? We are repeating the same story.
You again.
Oh, God, you again. Yeah, goodness. How could I?
Hell no.
You can see that. And in work, you know, you just got rid, quote, unquote, of the unpleasant colleague, and then the next one steps in and fills exactly that void and is unpleasant again. That is an energetic pattern that has not been resolved. And that's a nudge for you to look into your own energy. So where is there something within me that is not resolved, that I have not worked out? There's a kink somewhere in the tablecloth that's in my, you know, that I need to get out with the iron.
And what hasn't been expressed? And what part of you has put a lid on what actually needs to be expressed or done?
Yeah. Then another big sign and another nudge is when you experience friction. Friction with the person that rubs you the wrong way, right? In some traditions, they're called wonderful teachers because they push your buttons until you explode. Yeah? But that means there's something within you that can be pushed out of balance. So you're in your field and somebody comes and it's pushing you out of your inner harmony. It's pushing you out of your inner balance. It's pushing you out of your calm. And you become not calm. So that means there's more work to do. Something is in there that needs attention. And the question is what? Because otherwise, it will become a new pattern and it will repeat itself. Life is funny. It sends us these teachers, it sends us these situations so we can learn. This is all one big learning experience. You can actually look at it as one big experiment. Can we learn or can we not learn? Yeah? And what do I have to learn today? Let's see. Who is unpleasant to me and what can I find in myself, right? This is how it works.
And there's that old adage, know thyself. And if you take the time to truly know yourself and know what you like, you're not going to be able to be manipulated.
Yeah.
And that there's no need for you to comply with anyone. And no one sets the mandate for you on how to be and how to behave. And these are things to really think about. What you've been told as the truth, is it something given to you or you decide? Mm-hmm. And let this serve as an invitation for you to do the self-exploration needed to figure that out on your terms, just for you.
So what is on your billboard? Because what you have in your field is like a big billboard. What's the signal? What is your brand that you are sending out there? And you need to pay attention to it. Are you sending out there, I'm a doormat? Are you sending out there, I'm a dangerous person? Are you sending out there, I'm an insecure person? Those are all things that will be picked up by other people. And they will mirror it back to you. And that is the learning. And that's the signal, that's the sign for you to change something.
For example, if you are someone that struggles with insecurity, for example, you haven't discussed with anyone, you keep it quiet to yourself, but you feel it, you are silently emitting that signal, that frequency to other people. You're not talking about it, but even though you're not talking about it, it's still being sent. It's like turning off the cell phone. It's still emitting.
Yep.
And you will meet all these experiences that's going to test your insecurity and whether or not you can switch to the security until you can finally overcome that. And the teachers will keep coming until you get that together.
So the big question then is, how do you show up every single day for yourself and for others? How do you show up for your partners in intimate relationships? How do you show up for family? How do you show up for your children? How do you show up at work, within a team, towards your supervisor? If you are in a leadership position, how do you show up for your people? If you are in a learning environment, how do you show up for school, for college, for university? You set the tone. You are in charge. You are responsible. Are you able to show up calm, present, in tune? Easy does it. Yeah, not flying off the handle if somebody rubs you the wrong way. Are you able to see other people as they are? Are you able to listen to them without judgment and without scheming? And are you able to relate to them, not from your head, but from your heart? Now we have two brains, just in case you didn't know. Big thing up there, and then the little brain and the heart. Heart needs to guide our brain, not the other way around. When your heart sings, you know that truth is revealed in front of your eyes. Does your heart sing with your family? Does your heart sing with your intimate partner? Does your heart sing with your children? Does it sing when you go to work? Does it sing in a team setting, in a meeting? Does it sing when you have a one-on-one with your supervisor, for example? Does it sing in school, college, or university? That is the question. And ultimately, does your heart sing when you connect to spirit? That's the secret sauce. And we know this is not easy. It can be daunting because people rub us this way, people rub us that way. We have this thing that we don't want anybody to see. We have that thing. But let's get real. This is the year for deep transformation.
Can we also just let people be? Can we give our children, our partners, and everybody else space to be and not judge them or tell them how to be? Give them the space and the freedom to be and just leave them alone, because we know no better what's good for them.
And we don't know what pushes another's buttons. We don't know what breaks another's back. So we need to show up with kindness and compassion and in a way that is open and inviting.
That we show up with loving kindness, most importantly to ourselves. And we extend that to others. And let's try that on for size in 2021. I invite you.
That means present. So here's our invitation for you. Be present every day for yourself and for others and in every situation. Charge your field. Examine your field and become a beacon of light.
And keep the vibration up.
To uplift humanity, that's what we want. And with that, we will wish you a wonderful, uplifted beginning to this new, wonderful year.
Thank
Thank you for listening to the Energy Paradigm Show, where we unlock the magic of life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Visit TheEnergyParadigm.com and schedule time with how to run your life, and not let
hammer those of the host guests.